It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, and away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. It's that most wonderful time of the year.
It is.
Turkey season is here in the state of Alabama. I'm Sean Sullivan. There's my friend, Captain Mike Ward.
Yes, sir. How you doing, Sean?
Doing good.
Better weekend. It's going to be 45 degrees this morning and warm up to 55 degrees.
Yeah.
Sunshine and no wind. It is going to be an awesome weekend.
Hey, Mike, even though we'll let people know, this is pre-recorded because Mike and I are turkey hunting right now. That's not the forecast.
Oh, I thought that was just Saturday.
No. It's not. But the rain, but the rain's supposed to...
What? Rain?
Yeah. So, listen, it's turkey season. It's finally here. We'll get in some conversation, obviously, later on the show, talking about what we've been talking about for the last 3 weeks on the show, pretty much since the boat show.
That's right.
We've been talking turkeys.
Yep.
And we'll continue to talk turkeys. And there's other stuff going on. We'll talk about the fishing world out there as things are looking better on the freshwater front. But inshore-wise, Captain Bobby Abrascato was like... crying about it because he pointed out how good the wintertime fishing was, because other than that cold snap in December, it wasn't really that cold.
Right.
He said the water temperature went from like 73 to 57 over those last couple, so, you know, things like the fish were chomping in February, and then they get thrown this, curveball here in March, and he said that trout have just been kind of going back into a cold water mode, even though earlier they were catching them, drifting in 3 feet of water.
That's unusual for Bobby to be crying about trout.
Yeah.
Usually he finds them and stays on.
He said they're just not eating like they were in the weeks before. But we'll get into that. And also, once we talk about fishing, this is, for those of us who are participants in the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, we often will start thinking about rodeo in June and getting tickets and all that stuff and getting ready for it. But if you're a JC... this is 365.
That's right.
They live this, and it takes a lot. We talk about that, but it takes a lot to put on the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, so we might as well get started early in our conversation about it, and good to have VP of Publicity with the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, Matt Glass, joining us now. Thanks for your time.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Afternoon. So let's talk about this. Am I joking? Because I've talked enough of y'all over the years that – they say y'all take about, a week off after the rodeo, and then y'all are already back to meetings by August on this stuff?
That is correct, yeah. We'll have our first Monday meeting, that first Monday of August, and it's ready to gear up and start playing the next year.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, obviously to be the planet's largest multi-day saltwater fishing tournament doesn't come easily, but yeah, I think a lot of us that come out and have a big time don't realize all the work that's done before y'all open the gates.
Yeah, so there's a lot behind it, a lot behind the scenes. We have a lot of members, and it's a full-time secondary job, you could say, especially for like our VP and board members who put a lot of spare time into it. But it's for a great cause, and we all just love to get behind and do together.
Hey, let's stop for a second here, Matt, and talk about that, too, for the people who don't know the cause, because we look at it as this great fishing tournament and how much fun we have and the prizes people can win and all those things in that. But at the core of this, I mean, JCs, y'all are a volunteer charity group. You're raising money for charity, putting on the rodeo.
Yes, sir, that is correct. So the kids tournament, the Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament, which is July 15th this year, so all proceeds for that tournament actually go to a kids shopping tour that we go take a bunch of kids that normally would kind of not really have the best Christmas. And we took about 50 to 60 this past year Christmas shopping. And they're buying gifts for like their brothers and sisters, moms, dads, aunt, uncles. And it just, when you're taking those kids around shopping, you just see the joy in their heart. It's awesome. It's one of the most amazing events we get to take part in. And then another thing that we do, it's actually this afternoon at 5 p.m., we have our check presentation for South Alabama for their School of Marine Sciences.
And yeah, talk about this relationship. I mean, people, you know, think about seeing like Dr. Sean Powers down there at the rodeo site where they're getting, he's talked about it with us, all the great information that they get, you know, from the on the science side for all the fish coming into one place for them to take samples of and all that. But y'all give back in another way. You fund that research.
Yes, that's correct. So that goes towards a scholarship that they do, and they actually have their school now there in South Alabama where they have their own building and everything. So we're thinking and hoping that we've been able to help contribute to that. But, of course, you know, they help us by judging the tournament. But you have these students that come and they get their master's research done by coming to the tournament. They're, all the students that come through there, they said it would take a year, if not 2 years, to do all the research they're doing that one weekend.
That is, it's an awesome combination there. If you're just joining us, talking to a VP of Publicity, Matt Glass, with the Alabama Deep Sea Fish and Rodeo. So you gave me the date there on Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament. So obviously just plus it up, you know, the next weekend or the next Friday. That's going to be the start of the big rodeo. What's that, the 21st of July?
Yes, sir. So we'll kick things off, of course, July 20th with the Liars Contest. And we'll have bands, of course, starting then. And then July 21st through the 23rd is going to be our actual fishing tournament itself with the Cannon Blast at 5 a.m. on July 21st.
Now, we'll be talking a lot with y'all, I know, you know, in June and getting people. We'll talk about, you know, different tickets and getting in different jackpots and all that. But this is something that comes up. People say, hey, they'll be looking at the program from the rodeo or the people that are present there and say, man, I want to do that next year. I want to be part of that. This is the time, right? I mean, if somebody's interested in being a sponsor, being involved with y'all, helping out, this is when you need to hear from them.
Yes, sir, absolutely. This is the perfect time. So if there's a company or somebody has a product that they'd love to see in our awards package, we love teaming up with local companies and getting kind of sponsors. And if they want to be part of our award sponsorship, they can email JT Loper at awards@adsfr.com. And if they want to get into our sales, doing like the publicity and doing our sponsors that way and get inside our tent, they can email Chase Farley at sales@adsfr.com as well.
Good deal. And I'll have these contacts for folks if they need them. Also, you can, you know, go to the website and find your way. But yeah, so I mean, if you're somebody who goes, you know, we ought to be there, you know, well, this is the time. If you want to be there in July, you got to do this stuff now. In addition to, you and I were talking that y'all are going to be at the boat show by the bay coming up, and just like you were at the Mobile Boat Show. What are y'all doing there?
So we will be at the boat show in May as well, and that's coming up the last weekend in March. And what we're doing is just promoting, you know, meeting our anglers, meeting sponsors, trying to build the awards package up as we go. And one thing that we did at the Mobile Boat Show was we drew one name out of a jar and drew four tickets. And we're going to do that same thing for Boat Show on the Bay and draw that one name for those four tickets giveaway as well.
Be nice.
That's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I know y'all go and get all your awards and everything. Did you get a chance to go to the Miami Boat Show last week or week before last?
Yes, sir. That was actually back in February.
Okay, maybe it was.
Columbus. It was. I through Columbus, actually. I missed that.
Yeah.
We were down in Miami. It was a great time. Saw all of our big sponsors. I think we got some great new sponsors as well. So definitely looking forward to the potential there.
Yeah, I know y'all usually get to go down there and get to meet the boat companies that donate boats and motors and, you know, some of your tackle folks that you do business with. So I know that's got to be it's work, but then again, it's fun, too, to go to the Miami Boat Show.
Yes, yeah, sir, it sure is. It was a blast. Of course, got to see big ones like Contender and Yamaha.
That's right.
What's really cool about the legacy, the tradition of the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo is that there you are at the Miami Boat Show, which is not just a national boat show, I would argue international with the people come in for that, and they know who we are around here because of y'all in the rodeo. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, sir. It's always funny. They're always like, oh, that's the boys from Alabama.
Yeah.
A bunch of volunteers. They throw in the World's Largest Fish Tournament. And, I mean, we're talking to all these different guys throughout the like you said, the world. It was amazing. You hear all the different languages being spoken down there. And Contender, Yamaha, our different sponsors, I just want to introduce this to everybody and say, look, guys, y'all, you sponsor this tournament, you will not be taken better care of. And that's what we pride ourselves in, is taking care of our sponsors. They do a lot for us, and we want to be there for them.
Yeah, it's an awesome relationship y'all have built. But, it's not something that comes overnight. How many rodeos now have y'all had?
So this will be the 90th.
The 90th.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yep. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, so that was 19.
Mike, you weren't but 20 in your 20s then,
oh,
right?
Yeah, you, I was 20, young mid-20s when it first got started.
1929.
Yeah, 1929.
Mike was only 20. You were probably 29 back then, right?
Yeah, somewhere around there, yeah.
Once again, I know you gave those email addresses, and I'll keep them, but if somebody, is riding down the road, just hears that, I mean, can they go to the website, get information about being a sponsor, or get a contact there?
Yeah, so they can definitely go to adsfr.com, our website, and they can get all the same information, and then, of course, go watch all our Facebook page as well.
Good stuff. Matt, we appreciate it. We'll be talking a whole bunch between now and the Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament, so thanks for being on with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, right. Matt.
VP of Publicity, Matt Glass, with the Alabama Deep Sea Fish and Rodeo. Yeah, that's, the way time moves for me now.
It's going to be quick.
It's funny how it works, because I'll just blink my eyes and it'll be, I'll be getting ready for the rodeo.
Turkey season going to be coming and going real quick, and then all of a sudden we have start saltwater fishing a little bit, and then the rodeo's here.
There you go. Coming right back, we'll talk more about what's going on in the spring. Of course, there's some turkey-obsessed people sitting here, but there's some other things going on as well in the outdoors, and we'll get to them. We return right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have y'all along. And, obviously, well, maybe the new listener wouldn't be obvious, but we're in the woods right now. We recorded this ahead of time. Bad weather or not, it's opening day of turkey season, and so Mike and I are preoccupied with that, which let me say this, too. Mike, who has his brand-new robotic knee, is out turkey hunting this morning, which I don't know that I'm happy about. I mean, I'm happy you're turkey hunting, but not happy you're out there.
I just got to go slow and easy. The biggest thing with the new knee is I got to be careful where I walk. Don't wrap it around a vine stretching across. I got to just make sure I'm not stepping bad on a limb or getting hung up with my boot.
Well, that's called being in the woods, Mike.
Yeah, I know, but instead of looking ahead more, I'm going to be looking on the ground more.
Okay. And so, how are you going to get up from... Are you going to hunt with me? Are we going to hunt together so I can? Because I'm worried about you sitting down and then getting back.
I got my grandson.
Oh, you're picking up with me. He's strong enough to. Yeah, okay, good.
He can. If he can't, we'll go rent a crane.
Get you up there. What did you hear about youth season?
It looks like, from Facebook, I'm going to, and a few of my friends, looks like they did real well.
Okay.
Several of my buddies, their kids. Got them, and according to Facebook, pretty good.
Good. I mean, it's kind of weird. It's just...
It's like gobbling their heads off right now.
Right. Yes and no for me.
Yeah.
Like, it's... I've heard some, but it's not... They hadn't broken... now I'm not there all hours of the day.
Right.
We'll hear them a little bit in the morning, but not, blowing the woods down like I expect to have happen, today. No.
Well, the weather is going to be a really bad weekend, I believe. This front's coming through, and it's probably going to be raining early morning at daylight.
It's supposed to stop. Dr.
Right
Bill's
around there. That. Uh-huh. Now, up the country where I'm going to be, just looking at, what it forecast is right now, it's going to be raining up there to like 8 o'clock or maybe 9 o'clock is what it kind of looks like to me.
Okay.
So that means I'm not going to get out in the rain. I used to would probably, but I'm not now. And I'm just going to wait for it to get over with get out of there. And then Sunday, there's like a 40% chance of rain or something.
Is that what they're
Sunday?
Saying?
Yeah. So
that means big fields, pastures, roads.
Yes. Yes. If, you want to kill one and it's raining, sprinkling pretty hard or whatever, you go get on the edge of a field somewhere, you'll kill him.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
They're just going to be drawn to those open areas.
Right. That's where they go when it's raining. They get on roads or they get in a field, and you'll have a great opportunity on one.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the same. You got to figure out ways. We all have, like, the perfect morning scenario, and, blowing the leaves off the trees from the limb. You get in there in the dark. You sit down. You watch him pitch down. He comes strutting to you. That's perfection.
But that don't happen very often.
That don't happen very often. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot more turkeys that are killed on not perfect scenarios like that. And those are the ones you remember because they're textbook, and you're like, But there's a lot of turkeys that are killed at 8:15 in the morning, 8:40,
That's when I kill most of my turkeys, is after 8 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say at least 90% of my turkeys are after 8 o'clock in the morning.
90%?
I'm going to say 80% at least.
That's I'm right now running in my head. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, I have so many friends, and I hear people shooting all around me. You know, 10 minutes after it's daylight, and I'm saying, "Oh my goodness, man, he just whacked one, and I can't even see."
Right, right.
You know, so it happens all the time, and it happens to me every now and then, but it's just not very often. I don't know. I'm doing something wrong, or whatever. I don't know what the deal is, but I don't have that happen real often.
Well, I mean, it just depends on how you, every dang turkey's different. Every dang property is different. But, that happens when if you roost one, there's a better chance to have, if you know right where he is.
If you know the tree's in, absolutely.
Yeah, you can go be where you need to be.
Yeah.
Get between him and hens.
Yep.
That's always a problem, though, that you hear him fire off. You're like, okay, I got him. I know where he is. What you didn't hear is the hens that pitched up between you and him that you're going to walk
on
under.
The other side of him.
Right. Either scenario. Either you bust the hens. I've had it happen where you've busted hens out and it's been dark enough, you still kill the gobbler.
Yeah.
Okay. But, if it's close light and they go flying out, that makes it a little tougher. Or like you said, Mike, that those hens are right with him but on the other side.
That's right.
And he's looking at them.
That's right. And they pitch down. He's gobbling the tree and they pitch down and he's looking at them. He goes down with them and never says another word.
That's right.
You know,
so he's already got what he wants to do. He's got his girls. He's not going to go out there in the woods looking for Mike.
But after about 9 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock, he starts looking again. And if I'm lightly yipping every now and then, sometimes he'll come see me.
Yep. And how do you? I mean, how with Mike, you're going to hunt all day. I mean, you're hardcore.
I have patience.
You do have patience.
Is what I have.
Patience of Joe.
A lot of friends of mine don't have. I will sit there for a very long time.
Yep.
I can't tell you how many times I've just sat there and say, man, in 5 minutes, I'm going to get up. And then within that 5 minutes, here he comes.
Right.
You don't know when they're going to come. And I've sat there for 4 or 5 hours, and then all of a sudden, there he is. He shows up.
Yep. And you knew where you were.
And most people won't sit that long. Most people are sitting 30 minutes, 45 minutes, hour at the most, and then no turkeys. They're going off somewhere else to find the turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like if I sit there long enough and don't just yak, the whole time, just every now and then, lightly do a little yipping. A lot of times they show up, but a lot of times it's silent.
Yes.
They come in silently.
Or you'll hear the spitting and drumming, but he's not gobbling.
And that's the good thing that I have that a lot of my friends my age don't have, is that I can hear that turkey drum.
Right.
I can hear him. I can hear him spit and drum. You've talked about it before.
Well, you and I've sat there together and listened to him, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard him over 100 yards away.
Right, so that's what we're getting to. So Mike can hear, and my ears are not perfect. I've ruined them with guns and radio headphones over the years, but I can hear spitting and drumming pretty well. But when I hear it, they're pretty close. I've been sitting with Mike and he's hearing it, and I'm like, I still don't hear it.
Yeah.
And then after about 2 or 3 minutes, he's close enough, then I hear it. Yeah. So yeah, you hear it at a distance. I cannot hear it. Once they're inside 50 yards, I hear it and I feel it.
It depends on the weather too.
Uh-huh.
A lot of that's dependent on the weather, whether you can hear it that good or not. What I love about hunting with my grandson.
So it's good ears?
It's so funny. He said, "Papa, you hear that one?" No. He can hear him drumming further than I can. And then what I love about hunting with him, he said, "Papa, there's one walking just to the right of us over here, about 30 yards. You know, he can hear them walking in the pine straw and the leaves.
Young ears are a thing, aren't they?
Oh, man, isn't it? Especially when you know what you're listening for.
I wonder I've been talking about over the years, putting those, getting those ear, they're noise cancelers for the shotgun blast, but they also amplify the, you know what I'm talking about? You wear them like the hearing aid thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and hearing aids. A lot of people use hearing aids.
Right.
That I even with my good hearing that I have, I think that would probably help me hear it even better. But the only problem that I don't know that it would mess me up on, is it over to the right, straight ahead, or to the left? I don't know how that works with a hearing aid. Or even with the muffs that you put on that you can hear.
And they have the muffs, but they all also have ones that fit in your ear like a hearing aid that do the same thing with, they cancel out. Once it hits a certain decibel, it cuts it out. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know how that would work, you know, as far as
triangulation.
Yeah, trying to figure out exactly where he's at. It might work better than my regular hearing. I don't know.
I tell you what, if y'all have had experience with those devices, let us know by sending us a message on the Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. So there's a Facebook page for the radio station proper, and then there's one for the outdoors. You can chime in over there with your, you know, if you've used those hearing devices before. Or you can send us a good old-fashioned email, Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com. You mentioned, we talked about this 9 o'clock in the morning and sitting longer. You know, I think back to being a kid when I first started turkey hunting. I was told by a man who'd been turkey hunting a long time at that point, and he said, all right, he said, sit as long as you possibly can. That was back in the you yelp three times and shut up days. He said, do that. You sit as long as you possibly can till you cannot stand anymore. He said, and then wait another half hour. That's what they told me early on, and killed a lot of turkeys that way. I'd say I went through a run in my 20s and 30s. I really did a lot of running gun, move. But, you know, the old tactics work quite well, too. If you know your ground, if you know where you hunt, you know, that's a different thing. When I hunted a lot of public land during those 20s and 30s, so I did move a lot because you're trying to get to a bird before somebody else. You're trying to get it, you know, get close. You would risk bumping a bird because somebody else is going to come, you know, if he's fired off, he's going to come in. But when you know your land and you're on your lease or your property, whatever, and you know your land, you put yourself where they want to be. And I talk about this with duck hunting, too. You know what makes you look like a great duck caller? Is being where the ducks want to be.
Oh, yeah.
If you scouted them the day before and you're where they want to be,
they're coming in there.
They're like, man, you got it on the, you know, the same thing with turkey hunting. If you're where a hen probably would be during the day and it makes sense to that gobbler, that helps, too.
That's right. And look, there's a lot of variables there. And I'll tell you that I sit there for a long time, but if I'm hearing one 400 or 500 yards over here, and he just won't shut up. He keeps gobbling like crazy. Now I'm gonna get up and go over there,
right?
Because I know he's over there.
He's hot. Yeah.
And then it depends on how much land you've got. Mm-hmm. You know, if you got a lot of land, well, I'm not hearing anything here, then I'm gonna ease on down the road and see if I can strike one up and get him fired up. Now, you know, unfortunately, I don't have a large tract that I'm hunting on.
Right.
So it's probably better for me to if I sit one place for a long time, I don't do any good. I might go sit on another place for a long time.
Right.
You know, but if I get up and move around too much, my woods are open, real open. And if I get to moving around too much, I'm going to mess my whole property up.
Yeah.
So I'm a little better off just sitting still for a long time.
Absolutely. Or, you know, not just the side of the property, but the property that turkeys will use. You know, a place I hunted a long time. There were only certain parts of that property turkey would use, so you'd go to the other areas, but it didn't matter. You stayed.
Get there without being seen, too.
That's true.
Some of the places.
All right, coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, we're back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you all along on this turkey hunting Saturday. But there's people who see it differently, too. They're happy when turkey season's in because that gets some of us that both fish and hunt out of their way on the water.
That's right.
Those, you know,
they like it.
Yeah, they like it
a lot when we're turkey hunting.
Right. We'll see. Captain Wayne Miller is happy that he's not seeing the likes of us out there right now. Hey, Captain Wayne.
Hey guys, how's it going?
It's going good.
Doing good. I missed you at the boat show. Where were you at?
Oh yeah, man, I was around.
So. Yeah, yeah. Mike's just—he's saying he's turkey hunting with his knee. I don't know. We'll see where he is. His recovery is going pretty quickly. By the way, speaking of this, Captain Wayne, we talked about this at the boat show, and I was telling Mike about that. If y'all remember, that was that Friday of the boat show. It was crummy weather, and I don't even know what the river stage was, but it's crummy weather. And Captain Wayne, you were pointing out the stringers that came in that tournament.
Yeah, I mean, it was some pretty amazing weights, but, you know, it's what we're seeing now. I mean, we've seen this over the last, you know, couple of years. I mean, the Delta has really come on strong. I mean, like every fishery, you have cycles, you know, but, man, it's really taken some good weight, you know, now to win these five fish tournaments. I mean, probably the average for most of our tournaments here now, it'll take between 13 and 16 pounds to win most tournaments.
Which is good. I mean, that's basically a three-pound average for five fish.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, but one thing is really amazing to me is, like, you know, we've started to see a lot of big fish get caught, too. I mean, it's not unusual now to have, you know, to see, you know, the lunker in a lot of these events be a 6-7 pound fish. And, you know, for a pretty extended period of time, we just didn't see that on the Delta. I mean, typically most tournaments, you know, your lunker would be in that 4-5 pound range.
So what do you contribute that to, Wayne? Just cycling, or is it something that's...
Yeah, you know, I mean, we've had a resurgence of, you know, different vegetation on the Delta. I mean, we just had good springs. We've had, you know, good spawns. You know, it's just, you know, the fisheries just really come on strong. I mean, that... I really attribute a lot of it to, you know, the grass that you see.
Right. Which is where all the crabs hide and breed, and that's where all the shrimp and minnows, and that's where all the bait is, up in that grass.
Yeah.
And when you have years that you don't have that grass, you just don't have that food up there for the bass.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, but we just continue to see just really, you know, excellent fishing. And, you know, this past week, I mean, it was really crazy. I mean, a week ago today, last Saturday, you know, we had water temperatures leading up to that weekend, you know, in the low 70s.
Yeah.
Well, as everybody knows, you know, we had that pretty massive cold front come through. Now, Tuesday, I was going into some of the lakes on the Delta, the middle Delta, some of the lakes and the creeks, and I was fishing water that had dropped to 52 degrees.
Man, from 70 something to 52. I mean, that's 20 degrees.
A 20 degree drop in water temperature. But, you know, the good news is that, you know, all the rivers are coming down right now. Now, at the start of the week, this past week, the Mobile was at 7 feet. Well, it's down now, you know, below 5. You know, so it's been a slow fall on it. And the water's cleaning up in all these lakes and creeks. And, man, even with the drop in water temperature, you know, the fish had already pulled up into the shallow water, so it's not like they're going anywhere. But, you know, the bite stayed pretty strong all week long. I mean, surprisingly, even with that drop in water temperature, we were still able to catch a lot of fish power fishing with, like, spinner baits and chatter baits, and even buzz baits had been good.
So, and, you know, you're talking about, you know, two different species, but Captain Bobby had a different story with this water temperature. He had the same story in the water temperature drop. It messed up his trout fishing, his speckled trout fishing. It really made a difference. Those fish, he didn't know that they moved far, like you're talking about, but he said they just were harder to catch. And you're saying the bass, they were in the same areas, but were they harder to catch, or were they still, or just different technique?
Well, you know, it was really, I mean, and, you know, this this is going to sound kind of crazy. I mean, it's just the opposite of what most people would think. They would think, okay, you had a 20-degree, almost 20-degree drop in water temperature. So what do we need to do? We're going to slow down and drag some plastic or push a jig real slow. And I tried that the first part of the week when those water temperatures were extremely low and caught virtually nothing, you know, using soft plastic, lizards and creature baits. And so what I did, I started going to power baits like spinner baits, but I just slowed them down and I tried to kind of move out off the bank just a little bit. And what I found was those fish pulled out just a little bit, and they were suspended, and a lot of them were suspended on hard cover. You know, anywhere you had a log or a brush pile, you know, they wouldn't be right up against the bank. But especially if it faded off into deeper water, you know, those fish were out a little bit. And all it took was just, you know, getting a reaction strike. You know, and that's crankbaits and spinnerbaits are fantastic, too, to target that reaction strike. And that's what I started doing and absolutely crushed them.
So, I mean, yeah, it's contrary to what we'd think.
That's right.
But, yeah. Say the water temperature was 52 degrees, but it was in January or December. Would those fish be in the same place, or is it part and parcel of the fact that they moved up? And then they move right back out.
You know, it would be a totally different scenario had it been in January.
Even though the water temperature is the same.
The fact that we had had so much warm weather and our water temperature had gotten into the low to mid-70s, we just had massive waves of fish had moved into that shallow water. So, you know, like I say, it wasn't like they were going to pull back out and drop onto ledges in 8-10 feet of water. All they did, they just backed off just a little bit. And that's why it's so critical, you know, to be, you know, not to go out there closed-minded. I mean, you can't just go say, man, you know, this is what I'm going to do, and they're going to bite it. Well, you know, I always encourage both people that are fishing with me and anybody else, you know, that I'm trying to give advice to. You know, if you've got two people in the boat, you know, each one of you throw something different. I mean, and try to attack that water table at a different depth and possibly even a different speed because, you know, this time of year, once you lock in on something and you figure out what you can do to trigger that bite, you know, which is what happened this week, even with 52, 53-degree water, I mean, I took a spinnerbait and just – absolutely mauled them. But, you know, it was a specific speed, a specific depth, and a specific cover that you had to find to get bit.
So what do you think this does for the spawn? Because it dropped, you know, it was so warm and we knew fish were pushing up early. Now with that colder weather, do you think it extends the spawn, or they're all done, or sense?
It'll extend it. I mean, and, you know, what we see happen is, you know, I mean, we'll continue to have, you know, actually for, you know, the next month, actually 2 months, I mean, we'll continue to have, spawns. You know, we've got one coming up the second week in April. I think it's on the 5th or 6th. And, you know, there'll
full moon.
Big wave on that full moon. So, but, you know, these fish, they kind of, you know, I mean, I don't know how that pecking order works, but Mother Nature, you know, I mean, they don't all spawn at one time. And, you know, you'll just have waves that'll come in. So, you know, this is not uncommon for us to see this kind of cold front, you know, especially in March. So anything uncommon at all.
No, I don't think the cold in March. Heck, I think our biggest snow down here was in March. You know,
April.
But we had that big 93 storm or whatever. But So cold weather in March is, and turkey hunters will tell you how many times they've been out there, but it's just the fact that it was so warm beforehand that makes it seem
record breaking warm.
You know, makes it seem different.
Well, you know, and it did. I mean, we had some big, you know, and that's one thing you can attribute a lot of that weight to in the boat show, you know, because we had had so much warm weather, and you know, it had really warmed the water temperature up in those bays, and we had had a lot of big fish move into there. And I mean, they were whacking on them pretty good during that thing, man.
If you had a fish, well, I'll tell you what, we're up against a break. I'll ask you this when we come back. We're talking to Captain Wayne Miller, guide extraordinaire, Mobile Tensaw Delta. And it'd be interesting when you have this kind of weird warm then cold, what those bass are doing. He follows them around, so that's why we talk to him. We'll be right back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along. Always good to talk to our buddy Captain Wayne Miller. I ask a quick question here about the bays, and then I've got a couple things to get into. So those fish that stage up, they're out in, you know, one of the bays along the causeway, and that cold hits. You talked about where fish had pulled off, but what do those fish do? Do they pull back out into the creeks, or where do they pull off to?
You know, What you have down, the situation you have in those bays is once you get into the water temperature range of the, you know, high 60s, low 70s, and we had quite an extended period of, you know, time when we had that vegetation literally explodes in those bays. That grass grows so fast. And what happens once those fish pull into those bays, even when we have those cold fronts, if they've got that grass there, they just bury up and they don't go anywhere.
Okay, so they're still not leaving, going back out to a creek.
No.
Okay.
No.
We talked about this during the break, and so two things. There's a good fishing story here, and there's also a public service announcement coming from Captain Wayne. So it's good. Let's talk about you're fishing on Thursday morning. Tell us what happened. The two notable things, other than just whacking the bass.
Yeah, well, I caught quite a few really nice bass that morning on spinnerbait. But I also caught a 24-pound blue cat on a spinnerbait.
On a spinnerbait? Did you have some little stinker hanging off the back of it or something, or a liver? Or?
Yeah, it was, I pretty well knew I was up in Bayazee, so I pretty well knew this isn't a redfish probably, so it didn't take me long to figure out what I had, and it indeed was a beautiful catfish. But, you know, the other thing, and we talked about it during the break, and I'm glad you referenced it as a PSA, and I really think it is, because, man, anybody planning to going out on the Delta and fishing, especially up in the middle Delta in some of these lakes, make sure that you are prepared for the insects, primarily bull gnats. We have one of the most incredible population of bull gnats, I think, of anywhere in the world, and they are in full force right now. So, you know, and it's something that, you know, I mean, it's actually it's really critical, especially if you're taking, you know, kids or anybody like that out, because you know, they can, you know, they can make it so uncomfortable you literally just have to leave.
And even when you leave, riding down the river, they just about wear your eyes out. You're hitting them in the, you know, they're hitting you in the eyes and the mouth and the nose and everything else. People that don't know what bull gnats are, They're awful.
They're straight out of hell. They're straight out of hell. They're the spawn of Satan.
Yeah. I mean, you think a no-see-em gnat is bad? Man, think about one that's almost the size of a fly that bites. They are awful.
I wonder if they get done, or you know. But the bull gnats exist, for people who don't know what we're talking about. Like, and it's not just, it's, you know, a thing in the river swamp, but then, you know, areas in the Black Belt, anywhere you have some mud in your soil. They need that as part of their life cycle when they breed. But the are they getting worse? You know, I wonder about that. Are we getting...
They have spread. I can tell you that for sure. They have spread. There used to not be any. There was none in the Delta.
I do indeed think they've gotten worse.
Yes. There used to never be a gnat in the Delta.
But I wonder now if they finish their cycle, though, because, you know, bull gnats are bad, and then all of a sudden they're gone. So I wonder if they started earlier.
With all that 80-something degree weather. They could have.
And if they'll be done with whatever their cycle is that they got to do before, you know, because a lot of times you'll still have bull gnats, May, you know, in there. But then by summertime they start fading away. But I wonder if they fade away. I don't know. Are they in their cycle? Because they all of a sudden just kind of disappear.
Yeah, they don't.
Because if they existed the whole time, I wouldn't live here.
No, you couldn't stand it. You can't breathe for them. You know, and there's only just a few things that you can put on that will deter them. You think that something like off or cutters.
No, they lick that stuff up.
None of that stuff works. I mean, there's just a few items that work. And they're starting to sell it all around now, but we have this stuff called...
Buggins Natural, which I swear by.
And it works. Yeah, and it lasts for about 45 minutes, and then you have to reapplicate it again on your face and your hands and stuff, and then about another 45 minutes later, you put a little more on there. But it works, and it's the only thing that I've seen that does work. But there are some other stuff out there that people have told me that works, but I know Buggins Natural works.
Oh, yeah.
So it's if there's people out there that have never been around bull gnats, they don't know what they're missing. I'm telling you. And they have expanded. I know I used to hunt a place in Myrtlewood. That's Marengo County, and it was down on the river. And I turkey hunted there, and, man, it was fabulous turkey hunting. And that was the first time I ever encountered those things. And they would be 200 or 300 all around your head biting you. I tried everything in the world. I didn't know anything about Buggins Natural or anything. I tried everything, and I had to get finally a full head net that, you know, small enough mesh that those things couldn't go through. And that was the only way I could turkey hunt. And it still, they were so bad you couldn't hardly hunt.
Yeah, it makes you nuts.
That was the only place I ran into them. When I go back to my camp in Marengo County and, you know, Thomaston around there, there was none. But after about 5 or 6 years, they started showing up. Now they're there.
You know why? They rode back with you in your truck.
That's very possible. That's probably what happened. Very possible.
You moved them around. That's right. Yeah, Mike Ward is the Johnny Appleseed of bull gnats through the state of Alabama. Hey, before we run out of time here, Captain Wayne, somebody wants to get a trip booked with you now or even looking, you know, forward to fishing later this spring or summer, how do they do that?
They can reach me at 251-455-7404.
All right, and I'm really going to just tell you I'm upset that you didn't drop that blue cat off, or at least the fillets at my house, so I'm just going to tell you that. I know you release those bass, but, man, blue, I need to go catch some catfish. Thank you, Wayne.
All right, guys, have a good one.
All right, Wayne, thank you.
All right, there goes Captain Wayne Miller, and here we go. We'll do it all again next week. It's FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.